comment, Ruby. It's Ruby.
Hi, Ruby.
How are you?
Hi, Anna.
Good evening.
Hello. Good evening.
I will be starting with section 7, and the verse number is 39 in the Parsha of Noah, and we'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud kud shabarichu ishkin te bidhilu urchimu udhilu udhilu urchimu liakta l'shem yud he bagav he. The Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'asok Torah Mitzvah, Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kananehu. Vayar Elokim Et Ha'aretz, Vehine Mishchata, Amai Mishchata, Begin ki hishkhit kol basar et darko kima deitmar rabbi chiyayo patach tira v'amar vayar elokim et maasehem ki shevu midarkam hara'a tachatze Bishata divne nasha zakan venatre pikudei dioraita yedein ara itakfat bekochid chadu kedu ishtachat va maita ama. Begin dishkinta sharya al ara ukdein kola ilae utata bechadva. And Elohim looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. Why was the earth corrupt? Can it be that it deserved to be punished? And he answers, yes, because all flesh had corrupted its ways. As has already been explained, Rabbi Chiya opened the discussion saying, and Elohim saw from their deeds that they had repented from their evil way. Come and see, when the people are righteous and observe the mitzvot of the Torah, the earth is invigorated and full of joy. And why is that? Because the Shekhinah dwells upon the earth, and everyone, both above and below, is joyous. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Is that verse telling us that man's actions affect everything on the earth? In the physical environment, the trees, the plants?
If it's not doing it, there are other places in the Zohar and in the Torah itself that tell us that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do the man's physical actions affect the earth, it affects the universe. It affects the spiritual worlds above this earth. It affects the seven heavens and the seven hells. Everything is affected by man's actions on this earth. And more specifically, everything is affected by man's consciousness when they do those actions.
Mm-hmm.
So the earth was corrupt because of the actions of human beings, or actually, in some sense, the lack of actions of human beings of those 10 generations from Adam until Noah.
Well, I think it still happens because several years ago we had a terrible ice storm was probably in the late 90s. And for 4 days, everybody was without electricity because the ice was on everything, especially the trees. But so many trees were destroyed after that, you know, from the effects of that. And I don't know, one tubish spot, that memory came back to me, and I felt like, you know, it was because of man being so linked to the trees, especially, that was a cause of that ice storm.
Well, the cause of the ice storm, first off, whenever you're dealing with ice, you're talking about judgment.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to rain, which represents mercy. And whenever you're dealing with some human activity in that area built up, that negativity and required the cleansing associated with that. Maybe it was a wake-up call, but unfortunately in our Western world, we don't make the connections between man's physical actions and weather. Today I saw and I didn't read the article, and I don't know how true it is. I don't have any sense of whether it's fake news or not. But it essentially said that there was a particular species, and I don't remember which state, but it's a particular bird that the mating dance is extremely unusual, and it's on the endangered species list. And it's indicating that the evaluation of whether you should save an endangered species is being changed by executive order to include two additional concepts. One is local development, and the other is local jobs. So it will no longer just be if it's on the endangered species list that the species would be protected from development. Now they will take into account the promises that are made by the developers. How many jobs, how much wealth will go into the local economy.
Mm.
Now, I can't truly assess. On one hand, that's a very positive approach because human beings should have more significance than an endangered species if they can't eat. But maybe on the other hand, those species do need to be protected and that the people can make the adjustment to move. What is the correct thing? What is the right thing for people to do and how we handle that? So these kinds of questions are going to be coming up. They come up every day. They've been coming up every day, and they've been answered one way, and now it appears that there'll be some slightly different answers. But human activity impacts the world. Human activity impacts other humans. Human activity impacts the highest spiritual worlds and the lowest spiritual worlds. And we have to realize that. We have to make that, bring that consciousness back into the world. Because in those 10 generations, they knew it, but they had the arrogance to say, we're just going to tell the angels what to do, and they'll do it. So what's the problem? And we have Midrashim that say that. When Noah would say there's going to be a flood, and they said, oh, we're not worried about that. We'll just tell the angels to block up the cistern so the flood will stop. We'll tell the angel in charge of rain to stop the rain. So they knew that their activity affected it, but the arrogance was, so what? We can control the angels, and therefore we're in control of the world.
The other day I heard that if the honeybee ceases to exist, that man will cease to exist.
That is one of the scientific projections, because if the honeybee ceases to exist, there's nothing to impregnate or to pollinate the various trees and plants of the world. And without that impregnation and pollinization, that fruits will stop growing. And if fruits and plants stop growing, man will starve.
I also heard, too, that man in his arrogance believes that he can synthetically create whatever food or whatever other things that he needs. So where have we changed so much from Noah's day when Cain existed and where it is today?
As I said yesterday, yeah, I think it was yesterday or maybe last week, Rabbi Berg from the Kabbalah Center frequently said, people haven't changed, they've just developed different technology to make their life easier with no impact, no understanding of the impact on the environment, on the impact on the world, on the impact on all of the world.
Or spirituality would impact it. Go ahead,
Brandy.
What has the impact spirituality? They just do to receive, and as long as their needs are met and they're happy, well, they don't care what the spiritual aspect is. It's like, I'll deal with that later. Well, eventually later is going to catch up.
Well, isn't that the argument today over climate warming?
Very much so.
If we meet the limitations on the carbon released into the atmosphere, we will change the temperature, average temperature of the world by 2 degrees centigrade by the year 2100. That's exactly what the Paris Treaty says. The goal is to change the average temperature of the Earth by 2 degrees. Instead of going up, if it goes up by 10 degrees, it should only go up by 8 degrees. If it's going to go up by 2 degrees, then it won't go up at all. That's the language, that's the goal of the Paris Peace Accord. Now, 2 degrees on the average temperature is a significant change. But to most people, that's the difference between 68 on your thermometer and 70, and that only costs you $10 a month. So what's the problem? Now, all of those numbers I made up, other than the 2 degrees, which is correct.
Right.
Well, I found the synopsis there. It was just one sentence, so your eyes can't miss it because it's right there by the verse. And it says, reading these paragraphs helps purify the earth, which is constantly being corrupted and defiled through both small and large actions of negativity. So here the Zohar is giving us a vaccine to use.
The reading of these verses gives you that vaccine. But you have to understand what you just read was Michael Berg, Rabbi Michael Berg from the Kabbalah Center, who was in charge of the translation of the Zohar for the Kabbalah Center. and he wrote those summaries.
Oh.
And that's what you're reading from. So it's his opinion that these verses in this section, their spiritual work is to be a vaccine against human activity impacting the natural world. And so that's why he wrote what he did. And maybe it's true. More than likely it is true. I don't disagree. But you need to know where it's coming from and not accept that that's what the Zohar is saying. You need to know that it came from a modern Kabbalist in training, or a modern Kabbalist, depending on his spiritual level.
Well, that's good to know, because I just assumed that since this was an English translation, if it wasn't in capital letters, it was being translated. So that was that's good.
That's exactly the reason that I rarely read those summaries.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because if you read the summary, it's directing your consciousness to expect to see that within those verses that you read after the summary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
usually, I don't usually get back to them after we've finished, but this one is like staring you in the face because it's right on top of the first verse.
No, I appreciate it. I'm not arguing with you. It's right there staring you in the face. But it is coming from somebody who lives in this generation.
Right.
And you have to decide for yourself whether it's valid. So maybe and it will affect what you expect to see in these verses because we read it. That's why I don't choose to read the summaries. And I recommend, if you've ever read any of the handouts that I do, I say right at the beginning, you should read the verses first and then read the summary. But of course, I've made a decision that I will put the summary in advance so that people will know that it's available to them. But I strongly recommend you never read the summary until after you read the verses. And then you can determine whether his opinion of what those verses are doing spiritually is consistent with what you expect, what you thought those verses were teaching. Let's read verse 40. Waka benena asha becha bilan archaihu vila neatre pekude oraita vecha tan kame marehon vukden kiyako dachyan lalishkinta me alma vishta arat ara mecha bila deha shekinta at dachyayo bila sharya ala ubdein itcha bilat maita ama itcha bilat begin da sharya ucha achara ala din chabela alma v'alda amrinan d'Yisrael yachad vei oz le'lokim din kaimin alma elokim da shekinta v'im chas v'shalom Yisrael yishtachu tayavin makitiv ruma al hashamayim elokim wigomer mishum dereshet ekinu lifamai kafaf nafshi besivat kamasvishinat hinam karulifanai shuha vidomer vega ke gavna didor hamabu divgin hamas da hawat benehon hawa benehon shitina udbabu. But when people corrupt their ways, do not observe the mitzvot of the Torah, and sin before its master, then it is as if they drive the Shekhinah out of the world. Then the earth is left corrupt, for the Shekhinah is repelled by it, and does not dwell on it. Then the earth is corrupt. And why should the earth be corrupt? Because a different spirit rests upon it, causing the corruption. The rest of this paragraph is a later addition. That's Rabbi Ashlag telling us that it's really not the source of that, of the rest of the paragraph may not be from the original. And that's why they don't translate it. Are there questions or comments or thoughts?
Okay, so that was why it was a big paragraph in Aramaic and a small English translation. Okay, that makes
correct
sense. Okay. I think that's the first time we've ever seen that so far in our studies.
Oh, we saw it a couple of other times in I think once or twice in Bereshit, but mostly it happens elsewhere in the weekly parashas on Monday, Saturday night, or Thursday that we've
okay
seen that. But it doesn't happen often. Are there any other questions or comments?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Randy.
If the Shekinah is driven off and another type of, and an angel takes the place, is it an angel for that particular area, or is it an angel that encompasses all of the earth?
Yes. I know
yes
that I was joking. I was making it funny over that answer.
Well, you know,
well,
that's
what's
an
the
awful
difference?
Big
what's
attitude.
The difference?
That would...
What's the difference? Let me finish. What is the difference if it's an angel over the certain area of the earth, or if it's an angel on the equivalency of the whole earth?
I don't know.
Adam had all of the human souls within him. Within Adam and Chava, all of the human souls were within him. When we return to the endless, all of the human souls have to recombine into the endless vessel. In the endless world, you and I exist, but we're not ourselves. We're part of a whole. And it's only in this world that we perceive you and I separated from each other. But are we really separated from each other? Are there atoms in your little finger and atoms in your thumb? And Are the atoms interchangeable? But the atoms in your little finger and the atoms in your thumb are in the body. So it's all at the same time. The atom in your little finger knows it's in your little finger. But it also knows that it's part of the body and it's unified with the thumb. So when we say that this verse says the Shekhinah leaves the world, even if it's only part of it, it means that the Shekhinah is no longer whole. If I, God forbid, cut off my little finger, my hand and my body is no longer whole until I regrow that little finger. Now, obviously, if the whole earth is corrupt, as the Torah is saying in Noah, it's more severe than a little part of the earth. But if it's just one atom, the earth is not whole. And when I said one atom, I'm talking about A-T-O-M. It means that the earth is not complete. The correction is not fulfilled. That's what Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, really means. Oneness means everybody is united. Everybody is corrected. Everybody is ready to return to the endless. And that can only happen when we choose not to try and be coercive, but we reveal the light so that every person sees the truth for themselves. So now that I've depressed everybody, thinking how far we have to go, we'll do this again tomorrow.
Okay.
All right.
And I hope nobody is really depressed. I hope people are motivated to reveal more
light. No, I have a question. Ask you tomorrow.
No, you can ask the question now. It's fine.
Well, you know, when you look at the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, right?
Yes.
So you have it vertically. And you talk about the Shekinah, and then you talk about the world. And I can explain this. When I think of the Shekinah, I think it mostly of being in the world of Malkut. Because all the letters, like you have the absolute Berea, Yetzirah, and then you have Asiya, correct?
You have the four worlds, yes. The Shekhinah is a code word for Malchut of Atzilut.
Okay. So there's a division between the Malchut of Atzilut and then
the worlds
the
of Bria, the worlds of Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya are illusionary. Asiya is more of an illusion than Yetzirah. Asiya, one way of understanding the metaphor, is Asiya is 50% evil and 50% good. And Yetzirah is 25% evil and 75% good. And Bria is 90% good and 10% evil. But in all cases, those three worlds are illusionary to some extent. It's only the world of Atzilut that is real, that is permanent, that is forever. The world of Atzilut will eventually elevate itself back to the endless. But only after the negativity of the other three worlds will be cleansed. And the actions that human beings do in the world of Asiya is what does the cleansing in all of the worlds. Now, I'm not sure that's the question you were asking, Ruby.
I'll go think about it some more. Kinda.
Are there any other questions?
Are there times when you can be, when you're trying to be in unity with a diverse group, and so you don't put in your 2 cents worth, you keep quiet? That happens sometimes.
But yes, it happens many times.
Okay. Because our last cover study.
Say again?
We had our last Torah study last Shabbat. We had a visiting rabbi, and he was excellent. And the discussion was the differences between the verses of the 2 times that the 10 mitzvot, the 10 commandments, you know, the way they put it, appear.
The
discussion was very lively. And, of course, the verse about, you know, the sins of to the third and fourth generation and the definition of commandments. And it was lively and going back and forth. And I just felt like if I would have said anything, it would have created a can of worms, so to speak, and that it was best in order not to cause something that was so entirely different. Which, you know, which would have been Kabbalah's view.
Right.
It was best I didn't
most
say anything. And I felt like
most of the people
that I
go
was
ahead.
Being trying to, you know, stay in unity, and it didn't matter that I knew something different and had to share it, you know, which was unusual for me because usually I have a little something to say, but I just felt like it wasn't the time, it wasn't the place, and when I left and pondered it, I felt like, well, that was the way for me to stay in unity that particular time, and that's what I was supposed to do. But so that's why I ask you that. And Brandy and I discussed that this morning when we had a conversation. So that sometimes it's best not to say something than to say it, even though you know different and you may think your way is right, but you don't have to tear their way down. So sometimes it's best just not to say anything.
Well, let me relate the question in a different way that may give you a different perspective.
Okay.
We know one of God's names is Emet. One of his attributes is truthful. And we're taught throughout the Torah that if something is not true, God doesn't rest on it. God doesn't approve of it, so to speak. So what is the issue? Should I be truthful and know that I'm right when I say that the third and fourth generations is talking about reincarnation? Or am I correct when I'm being truthful when I don't say it, because the people that are talking that are involved in this discussion are not ready to hear about reincarnation. They're not ready to make that leap. They don't study Kabbalah, so they haven't had those experiences that allow them to see that truth. What is the truth for you at that moment? That is the question that you're asking yourself and that you chose to not say. What was the truth? The truth was not to be right. The truth was to respect the other's point of view. And therefore, they moved forward. Now, my personal experiences of those kinds of discussions, it's not a question of the people, the lively conversation isn't really searching for truth. The people who are expressing those lively conversations are expressing their egos. And therefore, there's no room for the truth. There's no room for that attribute of Hashem. But I wasn't in the room. I can't determine that in our discussion. But the real question is, what is the truth? There's a Yiddish expression. I read it this week, so I know it's all part of our discussion. The Yiddish expression, when it translates, it says, a half truth is a whole lie.
Mm-hmm.
But unity, shalom bayit, peace in the house, and that house doesn't mean just you and Tony or you and your husband. It also means you and your community. Peace in the house, shalom bayit, is letting the other person be correct rather than proving that you are right. Maybe by letting the other person be correct, it will lead to a longer process. But that longer process includes the unity. And unity will always excel being right. It may be a longer process, but that longer process will be a unified process. I hope I'm clear in what I'm describing.
Yes.
Shalom to all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our 7 o'clock class tonight will be continuing the teachings of the Third Temple. And tomorrow at 4:30, we will again have a mini Zohar class. And at 7 o'clock, we will have questions and answers. Shalom to all.
Shalom.
Shalom.